97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, glad you're with us on this Thursday morning. Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. I'm Mark Cox. That is Kim St. Ange, Carl Middleman in studio here, and of course, Sue Thomas keeping an eye on the traffic. It's actually pouring in downtown St. Louis right now. So I don't know where you, what it's doing where you are. If it's not raining yet, it will be. And I'm sure our morning commute will be interesting as a result of that. So be sure and stay tuned. And the one and only Sue Thomas will get you wherever you're going and tell you what's going on out there on the roads to help you avoid it. We are, of course, monitoring what's going on in Washington with the crash of a Black Hawk military helicopter with a mid-sized jet last night. I would say this was a 60-passenger regional jet coming from Wichita, Kansas. They're now putting the death toll on the airplane at 64, and there are 64 people on board. They've recovered 30 bodies so far. They are not expecting that they're going to find anybody who survived this, and there were three crew members, we're told, on the helicopter that collided with it. Lots of speculation out there as to how this might have happened. I'm not a pilot. I don't know. But we do know this. In about 21 minutes from right now, if it starts on time, there's supposed to be a briefing in D.C. By the NTSB folks and the folks that are investigating this. We're going to carry that live for you when it happens. So just stay tuned here. And if we get any more updates on it, of course, we'll bring it to you for sure. Coming up, we're going to talk to our friend Shannon Bream. I'm sure she's going to be covering this today. Griff Jenkins is one of the Fox News reporters scheduled to be standing down there on the riverbank of the Potomac reporting on this for Fox. And we are scheduled to get him on in the 8 o'clock hour as part of his normal time slot here on the show on Thursday morning. So I'm sure Griff will be able to give us an update later as well with anything that has developed during the show. We are up on the socials this morning. If you're on Rumble or YouTube or X or Facebook, we're going to be interacting with you on there. And of course, we thank you for joining us there. Our podcast is always available. If you miss anything, just go to 971talk.com, go to the Odyssey app, and you can download the podcast wherever you would normally get your podcast. So right now, I want to go ahead and get to our top stories. Carl, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
We should note here that the military is now confirming there were three soldiers on board the Black Hawk helicopter. We do not know, by the way, their condition. We don't.
Yeah, that part of Fox News reporting last night. This was apparently one of an aircraft used to transport officials, like from the Pentagon and other places around Washington, D.C. and that immediate area. It's not clear that any of those high-ranking officials were on board. We're hoping to find out more coming up at 6:30.
Today, I'm also signing an executive order to instruct the Departments of Defense and Homeland Security to begin preparing the 30,000-person migrant facility at Guantanamo Bay.
Boy, what a change has happened in a week and a half in Washington, D.C. We have gone from a Biden administration intent on shutting down Guantanamo Bay, where we can keep our most serious criminals away from Americans they want to kill, to expanding it and maybe putting illegal criminal aliens down there.
You know, any of the Democrats who are chuckling just now, do you think all that money, the $900 billion that we're sending to Medicaid every year, has made Americans healthy?
Yeah, RFK Jr. there, and excuse me, in his hearing yesterday, RFK Jr. Was talking about eating McDonald's cheeseburgers. He goes, you can still do that if you want to. My boss does that. But we want you to know what you're eating. It's pretty simple.
The snow and ice from the winter storm weeks ago continues to melt. One South City neighborhood is coming together trying to prepare for future weather events like this.
Oh, I need my lurch soundbite this morning, Carl, and I didn't have it queued up for right there. That was Corey over at Channel 4 there, Corey Stark, talking about what one South City neighborhood has decided it's going to have to do, Kim. Something similar to what Carl Middleman's neighborhood already does when it comes to safety. Because you're a tax-paying city resident, but you can't expect the security you should get for your tax dollars. Is that right, Carl? Have I summed that up properly?
Yes. Overnight, there is a security detail that goes around the St. Louis Hills neighborhood that we pay for.
Here it is. Why? What greater failure of city government example could you find than the fact that the city cannot meet its requirements? You deserve better than that if you're a resident of the city of St. Louis. I want you to listen to part of this story yesterday. So the Benton Park neighborhood, which is over there by Soulard, just south of downtown, of course, covered in ice, has been for 23 days. Like the streets weren't, they had, some of them just weren't touched. People couldn't get out of their neighborhoods. Their cars were parked on the streets. City just basically ignored it. So these people decided, you know what, since our city taxes didn't do us any good, here's what we're going to try to do moving forward. Go to cut 14.
Snow and ice from the winter storm weeks ago continues to melt. One South City neighborhood is coming together trying to prepare for future weather events like this.
The Benton Park neighborhood is working to form a community improvement district, also known as a CID. The people behind this effort say this proposed idea is about taking matters into their own hands, like road cleaning.
I'm sorry to laugh, folks. And I'm sure that the guy that's come up with this idea thinks it's a great idea. Now, there are a number, as Channel 4 was showing, there are a number of these community improvement districts in the city already where people have realized City Hall and the Board of Aldermen are not going to help us here. We're on our own. Like, if we want more security, we're going to have to get together, raise taxes. In addition to what we already pay the city for these services, who aren't getting it done, and we're going to have to hire private security or private companies to come in and take care of our streets, city streets.
You've been in that neighborhood, Mark. You know parking over there is already atrocious. I don't know what they think other plowing is going to do over there.
Is your street finally melted because we've had warmer temperatures?
Yes, but not my lawn.
Yeah,
right.
But you can get around and park.
Yes.
And I mean, I can't imagine having to shell out more money when I'm saying when I'm already paying city property taxes. I'm not saying a lot of these people want to go protest, but I think if enough people stood outside of City Hall and held signs and screamed for days at Tashara Jones and some of these other city leaders who have completely dropped the ball, it seems like that would be effective because they wouldn't want it. Remember when the homeless people were outside and they only cared when they had the fancy people coming in?
Yeah.
And they were going to the bathroom and they didn't like the smell of that. Do you think that could be helpful, or do you think that they would just fall on deaf ears?
I don't know. Couple things here. I think it's important to look at the history of this. 20 days after this snowfall, there were still people in the city of St. Louis that couldn't get their cars out or couldn't drive on their streets because it looked like an ice rink. Right. So the city finally responded 20 days late. So, Carl, the answer to your question is what these people are going to do is hire a private company with smaller trucks and plows to make sure that somebody's paying attention to the streets in Benton Park, because the city's not going to. It took them 20 days to respond this time. Here's the other important thing. The so-called Benton Park CID, the taxing district, would mirror what they're already doing in Soulard. With a special business district fund that pays for things like extra security and things like that. The difference there is the businesses chip in. In Benton Park, this is largely residential. So all this is going to mean is a lot higher taxes for those residents who already pay taxes to the city who aren't getting the services they deserve.
Well, and what happens if somebody in the street says, I can't afford to pay those taxes? So do they get the services if they're not? I mean, it's not like they're going to stop right in front of that particular home.
They will, but they'll be forced to pay. So they'll go around, they'll collect signatures, and then they'll have to have a vote on it. And a certain percentage of people on the street would have to agree to form the CID. And then if it forms the Community Improvement District, everybody who lives there is on the hook at that point. You can't say, well, I didn't vote for it, so I'm not paying it. You're on the hook. You have to pay for it.
I mean, how much do you think we're talking about per month?
I just don't know. I don't know
what
it's going
to
be.
Are you paying a lot per month for private security?
I don't know. And I don't even know where it's coming from.
What do you mean?
I don't know what they added it on.
Well, I think...
We don't get a bill.
Yeah, I think if it's a CID, the money's still collected by the city, and then it goes into the separate pot for the residents there to use for whatever.
Right? Well, it's not like you have an HOA where you're paying into that. Right. Yeah, so...
St. Louis Hills is its own HOA.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, anyway, how embarrassing. Right in the middle of a mayoral election, these are important issues. We're going to talk more about that tomorrow. Jane Duker is going to join us on the show tomorrow morning because she's got some thoughts on this mayor's race and Mayor Jones and Kara Spencer and Andrew Jones and the rest of them who are running for mayor this year, and maybe what you can do to impact it if you live and vote in the city of St. Louis. So we'll be back. More on the crime problem in the city and control of the city police when we come back. So if you were listening to the show yesterday, we talked a little bit about Mike Kehoe, of course, the governor of the state of Missouri, and his discussion about what he's hoping to do again, which is make Missouri safe. Did you hear that?
Before becoming governor, I promised Missourians I would take action on crime as soon as my hand left the Bible on Inauguration Day. And we did just that, signing 6 executive orders that were developed based on input from law enforcement to launch our Safer Missouri initiative.
So a couple of issues there. Number one, if it's that simple, why didn't Mike Parson do it? I mean, I'm glad Mike Kehoe did that, but I don't know what real impact some of that's going to have. Part of it had to do with cooperating on immigration, things like that. I'm glad he's doing it. I just wish that Mike Parson might have done those things when he was governor. He had the opportunity, just like Kehoe did. Now, the other thing he's pointed out is that he is in support of moving control of the St. Louis police back to state control. And I think that is a ball that's rolling with his bold statements on this as a candidate and now as governor, combined with Nick Schroer, the state senator, and others who have been pushing for this in Jeff City. My guess is it would take a major blunder on the part of Senate leadership to blow it at this point. It should be a done deal. I don't know when they'll do it. I'm sure there'll be Democrats down there threatening to try to block it somehow. But I hope that they get it done, right? So then now there's a full frontal offensive by the city to try to get them to stop. And yesterday I watched Chief Tracy from the city go on the local news stations, including Channel 4, where he spent a part of his time lecturing Nick Schroer and mad about people claiming crime statistics weren't what they say they are in the city, and they're arguing that they're going down. And here's what else he had to say. Go to cut 13, please.
These are individuals who say they support the police, but then they say it's not about the police, but then they say all the good work that police have done to get us where we talked about the crime statistics and getting the city safer. That's hard work because right now we're understaffed. We all know that. And they've gone out and did a tremendous job. I've asked them, and then they say these statistics are not real. You are actually attacking these police officers. And think about, there's enough thing to demoralize policing where people say they support them and go out and use this type of tactics to get their narrative across to try to get a bill passed. You know what? Do it on merit. Do it on principle, but let's deal with the facts. And then that deal with facts, and it's demoralizing our police department and the good work that they've done. And you know what? I'm going to push back against that.
Yeah, so that's Chief Tracy's take. If you're opposed to local control of the city police, you're opposed to the police. You don't support the police. Well, here's the problem with that, Chief. I know a lot of city officers. I have drinks with them. I smoke cigars with them sometimes. And to a man... and a woman that I've spoken to down there, your street level police officers are all the ones I've talked to are fully in support of the state being in control again. And the why is pretty simple because of what happened with this pay raise. People recognize a shell game when they see it. When you're just moving the cups around on the table, you raise the salaries for the police. Thank you for doing that. But you paid for it by eliminating 115 jobs. Now, they weren't jobs that were filled because you've been unable to fill them. But to me, that is defunding the police because there are now fewer positions available if you could fill them. And when this thing's gone to state control, you don't worry about the whims of local politicians like Tashara Jones and Kara Spencer and Megan Green at the City Board of Aldermen who were on the defund the police bus just a couple of years ago. You remove them from the equation and you put some common sense people in there appointed by the governor who can oversee this operation and make sure that there's minimum funding for the police. They'll set a minimum for that and that you're actually getting the money and the personnel on board. You need to say nothing else other than the fact that all of this Rams money is going to be handed out. We're going to give free child care and college education to city employees, but we didn't spend a dime on public safety. That's all people need to know. And your officers on the street are watching. They're paying attention to that. And I think that there's a message there that the chief probably needs to take to heart. All right, we're going to be back here in just a minute. We got in other news coming up about 6:45 as well. News conference coming up here in a minute. All right. Right now, there is a news conference getting underway in Washington, D.C. regarding that plane crash last night at Reagan National. Let's listen.
At the media stage. Oh, there she is.
I'm Uriel Bowser. I'm the mayor of Washington, D.C. We are here at Reagan National Airport to provide an update on the tragic events of last night. I'm joined by U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, D.C. Fire and EMS Chief John Donnelly, American Airlines CEO Robert Eisen, the Washington Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority CEO Jack Carter, United States Senator Mark Warner, United States Senator Tim Kaine, U.S. Representative Don Beyer, as well as the Chief of the Metropolitan Police Department, Pamela Smith. And we are joined by first responders from across the Metropolitan Washington region. I speak for all of us when I say, and certainly all Washingtonians, how very sad we are for American Airlines, for the United States Department of Defense, and for all Americans for the loss of life that happened with the collision of these aircrafts. We know that includes families from across our region, as well as in Kansas and across the country. This morning, we all share in a profound sense of grief. I do want to thank the first responders who acted quickly last night, who ran towards danger, went into a very frigid river, and have worked throughout the night. Chief Donnelly reported in last night's briefing that we have a strong mutual aid agreement in our region, and those teams have worked together throughout the night in really tough and heartbreaking conditions, and we should all thank them for their heroic efforts. So we'll have several updates today. I'm first going to turn to the Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy, and then you will hear directly from Chief John Donnelly with a situational update.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, Sean Duffy here, Secretary of Transportation. We wish we were gathering for different purposes today. I just want to let you know that the Department of Transportation, the FAA, along with the White House, President Trump, local, state, and federal partners all working together on this incident in unison. I couldn't be prouder of this team that's been assembled, working tirelessly. Mayor, I want to thank you specifically for your work. A few details I'd like to give all of you, and some of you reported this, but last night, if you live in the D.C. area, you would know that this was a clear night last night. The helicopter was in a standard pattern. If you live in the D.C. area, you'll see helicopters up and down the river. This flight pattern is seen oftentimes when you live in D.C. This was a standard flight pattern last night as well. The American Airlines flight coming into land was in a standard flight pattern as it was coming into DCA. So this was not unusual with a military aircraft flying the river and aircraft landing at DCA. And again, if you live in the area, you'll see that frequently with those two aircraft working together. As you many of you have reported, we have located the two aircrafts. The fuselage of the American Airlines plane was inverted. It's been located in three different sections. It's in about waist deep water. So that recovery is going to go on today as that recovery takes place of the fuselage of the aircraft. NTSB is going to start to analyze that aircraft, partner with the FAA with all of the information we have to get the best results possible for the American people. I would just say that safety is our expectation. Everyone who flies in American skies expects that we fly safely, that when you depart an airport, you get to your destination. That didn't happen last night. And I know that President Trump, his administration, the FAA, the DOT, we will not rest until we have answers for the families and for the flying public. You should be assured that when you fly, you're safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary. Thank you, Mayor. I'm joined today by with Fire Chief Bonnet from the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority. And I'm John Donnelly, Chief of the District of Columbia Fire and EMS Department. Last night at 8:48, the control tower sounded an alert, which alerts responders to respond to a report of an aircraft crash on or near the airport. That sets off an immediate response from the Airport Authority Fire Department, from the District of Columbia and Metropolitan Harbor Patrol fireboats and other fireboats on the river in order to support that type of operation. Very quickly, this call escalated. It became apparent, you know, the responders realized that they had a plane crash and immediately escalated to a response that ultimately included about 300 people last night. These responders found extremely frigid conditions. They found heavy wind. They found ice on the water, and they operated all night in those conditions. I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the agencies that responded in addition to DC Fire and EMS and Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority, Montgomery County Fire Department, the Prince George's County Fire Department, the Charles County Fire Department, the Baltimore County Police Department, the Anne Arundel County Fire Department, the Alexandria Fire Department, the Arlington County Fire Department, the Fairfax Fire Department, the Prince William Fire Department.
So you're listening into a live briefing. Some of this stuff is not extraordinarily relevant to giving us new information. That is the EMS chief there in D.C. I thought it was interesting what Sean Duffy had to say, though, Kim, because if he wanted people to know that if you were watching that, you might wonder, well, what in the hell was a helicopter doing right there in the flight path for Reagan National? And I think his point was helicopters routinely fly up and down the river, and airplanes routinely land in that flight pattern, and there's normally not a problem. And I think he wanted Americans to know that it wasn't like the helicopter wasn't supposed to be there or the plane wasn't supposed to be there. So the next step is to figure out why air traffic control didn't coordinate it better, I would imagine, would be question number one. Why the helicopter didn't take evasive action, because it would have been pretty obvious that there was an airplane there. We could see the lights on the video. I mean, there are lots of questions that remain, but the fact that both aircraft happened to be in that airspace is not unusual. It's a busy area. If you've flown in and out of Reagan, I mean, there are usually two planes lined up at any given time on that two or more planes lined up at any given time ready to land at that runway. And you can look down out of the helicopter and very often see or out of the airplane and very often see helicopters and stuff flying around D.C. It's a busy airspace. And I could not imagine what those air traffic controllers are going through up there to try to keep all that in place. Clearly, something went horribly wrong last night. Let's listen back in. I think this is another one of the fire department officials, Carl, and see if there's any new information here.
On the military aircraft, our focus right now is doing everything that we can to support all of those involved and also the PSA Airlines team. This is devastating. We are all hurting incredibly. We urge any family and friends looking for information about their loved ones to call our designated helpline, and that's at 1-800-679-8215. 1-800-679-8215. And here's what I can share at this early stage. American Eagle Flight 5342, operated by PSA Airlines, traveling from Wichita, Kansas to Reagan National Airport, was involved in an accident just before 9 p.m. local time on final approach into Reagan National. It collided with a military aircraft on an otherwise normal approach. And at this time, we don't know why the military aircraft came into the path of the PSA aircraft. Flight 5342, a CRJ-700, was under the command of four crew members. They carried 60 passengers, as you know, for a total of 64 people on board. In addition to local resources already here in D.C., American Airlines has activated our CARE team, and that's a group of specialists that are trained to support these types of responses. These team members are on site or arriving soon. And additionally, we have members of our GO team that are on ground here in D.C., and they're being deployed with resources to do everything that we can to take care of the needs of the families and the loved ones of the passengers and crew members. And that is our sole focus.
And all right, that is that's Robert Isom. He's the CEO of American Airlines. Again, not giving us a great deal of insight into what anybody thinks happened yet. We got the same numbers we had before: 64 people on the plane, 60 passengers, four crew members, three members of the people of the military on the aircraft. Everybody seems confused as to why these two were in each other's flight path, and that's where the investigation will focus.
So it sounds like they've recovered 27 bodies from the plane, one from the military helicopter.
Okay.
And they're saying that the aircraft was recovered in three different pieces in waist-high water. I thought I heard this morning on Fox News Radio them talking about how air traffic control had been trying to get in touch with the helicopter, and they stopped responding.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know what was going on with it. We'll get more details here as it goes along. Carl, I'm not quite sure who this is speaking. Why don't we tune in for just one more minute here?
So we're very sympathetic to that. I want to echo what was said about the first responders. When there's a problem in this area, everybody drops everything, and they rush to wherever the problem is. So I want to thank the chief, the entire team from Washington, D.C., but just as important, the list of folks that the chief described, the federal authorities have been here en masse. And so a lot of effort was brought to bear. Unfortunately, we weren't able to rescue anyone.
Yeah, that's the airport director up there talking now. And again, we're not getting much new information as to why this happened. The basic facts we've got covered now of how many fatalities there probably are going to be. And the big question that remains is, why did it happen? Why was the helicopter not responding? Why was it right there? How did it not see the plane coming? There's been no discussion of terrorism or intentionality. But my guess is we'll get those answers as the day drags on here and as the investigation continues. We'll get back to that if there's any more breaking news. Right now, we're going to get to a quick break. Still ahead, we've got Shannon Bream just a little later from Fox News Sunday, and I'm sure she's covering this as well. So we'll get the latest from Shannon if there are any updates. We'll be right back.
What's happening?
Go, you know the thing.
What the hell is going on?
In other news.
You know, before we get to Ethan here, I just want to point out we've been monitoring this news conference out of D.C. We carried a little bit of it live for you earlier. Mayor Muriel Bowser is still talking, and they really haven't given any new information that we didn't already have. The totals are the same. Nothing's changed from that, and there's no indication yet of what caused it. That's the big question. The NTSB is going to hold a news conference later today. Hopefully they'll have more details. If we do get anything new, trust me, we will break in here during the show up until 9 o'clock and bring it to you live.
It makes my news not so important. The NFL's annual tailgate concert is moving from TikTok to YouTube for this year's Super Bowl pregame event. Post Malone's going to headline the live stream. It's set to begin at 5 p.m. Central Time on February 9th. So if you want to watch it, this shifts aligns with YouTube's growing partnership with the NFL, including its multi-billion-dollar Sunday ticket deal. TikTok's absence follows the ongoing legal uncertainty over its U.S. operations. Meanwhile, YouTube continues to prioritize live music, having just streamed the Coachella Fest.
Sorry,
the
I missed
that. Game start at 5:30?
I thought so, doesn't it?
So he's going to do what, two songs?
Oh, they've said there's like a big concert event. I mean, it's got Post Malone. They're going to have a bunch of YouTubers that are on there.
So this isn't YouTube TV.
It can't be
TV.
Two songs.
This is
it's
actual.
It's
going to
have to be longer than that.
Yeah, YouTube.
If the game, then it's only going to be a half hour set before.
Is
the
it
game
like
starts.
A pregame though at 5:30, or does the game
I
actually
thought the
start?
The game started like.
I think the game starts at 5:30. Usually it does, yeah. Which they should move it to earlier or just move it to Saturday.
Right.
But you don't have to have a YouTube TV subscription. It's just YouTube.
No, it just said it's on YouTube. It looks like Ringo Starr revealed on Jimmy Kimmel Live that he has never in his life eaten pizza.
What? Thank you, Carl.
I know, Sue. This is exactly... me and Carl talked about this outside, and I'm like, I'm calling BS on this. But
is he a vegetarian? Like, is he a vegan? Is it?
He is.
Is he got gluten allergy? So, what the hell?
No, he said it's due to allergies and dietary restrictions.
Hmm.
So in all those years, he's never... The funny thing was, in 1995, he was a spokesperson for Pizza Hut. The
How can
irony.
You talk about that if you've never even...
And the weird thing about
Monday.
It is that
that's
the,
true.
The primary meal in England for the longest time was something to do with meat and potatoes at a pub. Mm-hmm. What the hell did he grow up eating?
Well, Ringo Starr.
Well, he is Ringo Starr. So from the time he's about 19 or 20... Yeah,
Rubies.
Thank you. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Former MTV VJ Matt Pinfield has been placed under a temporary conservatorship after he suffered a massive stroke on January 6th. His daughter Jessica filed for the arrangement due to concerns about his ability to manage his health and finances. Pinfield, who was actually 63, remains hospitalized following the stroke.
I don't know who's that. I don't recognize
he was
that name.
Squat, bald guy.
Okay.
Yeah, he was always on MTV.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
He and Carl would hit it off. They both are like musical geniuses.
They know everything. Very knowledgeable.
Don't use the G word with Carl.
Carl is
you'll make his head swell. Don't do
that.
No. Thank you.
But you know what, Mark? Last night or yesterday, watching the RFK hearings, all I could think of was this. Because the woman. RFK Jr. is married to Cheryl Hines, who played Larry David's wife on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yep.
And I could just focus. She was the pretty blonde right behind him. And every time she just... And now that song is stuck in Ethan's head.
I finally got it out of there, and now you're playing it again.
Yes. That's funny.
OpenAI has accused Chinese AI startup DeepSeek for improperly using its proprietary models to train its competing open source AI system, potentially violating intellectual property rights. OpenAI claims to have evidence of distalization, a process that allows smaller models to mimic larger ones at a lower cost. While common in AI, OpenAI prohibits use of its outputs to develop rival models. So we're going to see where this goes.
So now that's how they think the Chinese came up with this?
Yeah, we'll just steal yours.
Yeah.
That's what
surprise, surprise. That's what they always do.
And one quick one. A painting bought for under $50 at a Minnesota garage sale in 2016 may be an original Van Gogh worth $15 million.
Oh, my gosh.
It's according to experts.
How come I'm never that lucky?
I know, right?
How do they determine it's truly authentic?
They've had a bunch of experts actually looking at it and looking it over.
Wow. All right, stay tuned. We're still monitoring this news conference up in D.C. Nothing real new out of there yet. If there's any breaking news, we'll bring it to you next hour. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.